what is going on to the equation.
Stop doing philosophy, stop doing music.
those are the two things I'm not qualified for.
Those are the S-tier things you should be doing.
Sure, the thing with philosophy is...
There's a lot of,
you know, philosophy involved in it.
Wallah.
Yeah. Also philosophy.
We said stop doing philosophy.
Yeah.
Like, we just literally just said stop doing
philosophy.
Like,
the more you read about it, the more you realize that, like, some homies really had a lot of time on their hands.
The more you read, the less you know.
Yeah, actually, that's true.
The Monday who is
that's much. How you do philosophy. Hey,
welcome back. Welcome to your boy Adi. What's happening? What's popping? Episode 255. I got the homie Turks on behind me. I got you.
Yo.
I got the homie Champs right next to me.
Yeah.
Number one is on a mission somewhere. We don't know where he is.
Siberia.
The little terrorist.
Once again. Astaghfirullah. Kalam
Eid Mubarak, everybody. Eid Mubarak, everybody. How was eating, everybody?
Eid was nice.
Eid
as usual, with the family, having that couple of days to just engage socially and stuff.
It is fun. I do appreciate it, but it is a struggle. And I cannot do this anymore. I just can't.
What is this exactly?
The constant, like the circuit.
The circuit.
Yes.
Okay. Tell us about the
rally.
Tell us about the circuit.
The Eid morning rally.
Yes. Morning?
It starts in the morning.
That's phase one.
It's a rally.
That's wave one.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, wave one. You have multiple battles in wave one. Okay.
Oof, multiple.
Yeah, okay. About four or five. تقريبا.
A lot of head-to-heads.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of places you got to visit. A lot of people you got to see. A lot of the same people that you got to see in different places also.
Okay.
And then you go to sleep at around noon to wake up at 6 o'clock to start wave two.
Round two.
Okay, sure. Round two has multiple waves.
Yes. Come on. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. The hierarchy. Man, I can't. I'm just, never mind.
So this is all in day one.
Yeah, this is all day one.
What happens day two?
Round three.
Round three.
Yeah, there's no round four. Alhamdulillah. But yeah, it's tough. And my body cannot handle it anymore and it's shutting down.
Mm.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, my Eid is a lot simpler than that, thankfully, alhamdulillah. It's just one main round on day one, which begins from Ba'd al-Asr until Isha. And then another round on day two, which is, again, Ba'd al-Maghrib. So,
amazing stories, guys.
I do understand the struggle that goes with...
But that's a tradition of Eid.
Exactly.
This is what we do on Eid.
It's still fun.
Mm. I still enjoy it. A lot of people that I haven't seen in a while that I get to see for a short period that I don't have to fake a conversation with. It's just a hi, hello, good to see you.
For our non-Arab, non-Muslim listeners, this is similar to going home to your family in Christmas.
But we do it twice a year. We do it after Ramadan. We do it around Hajj.
Yeah, okay, it doesn't matter.
It's two Eids. We have two Eids.
I'm trying to give them the feeling.
Yeah.
That's when when family all comes together and everybody gets to meet and hang out. And family fights, and you know, the usual.
We get the meats also. There's usually very nice to be involved.
Okay, phrasing.
Which is important. I feel like it's an important part of Eid. It's that it's the communal gathering, bro. It's you sitting with all your uncles, all your cousins, you know, catching up. You the people that you don't see regularly, that's the opportunity you actually get to, you know, see what's going on with their lives.
Exactly.
And let's not forget the Eid competition.
Which one?
Exactly.
Who's looking flyest?
Exactly.
Who's looking cleanest?
Exactly.
I mean, that's the...
Who's popping up at the end of Ramadan to Eid?
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen you in a minute. Mm-hmm. Oh, check me out.
Yeah.
Bitch.
I've been looking. I've been doing good. I've been doing good. Yeah, it's a celebration at the end of the day. It's a celebration for, you know, the community, for the family, for, you know, the start of, the end of Ramadan and the start of the rest of the year. So it's
okay.
It's
he started that sentence. He just wanted to end it. Mad of kif, but
I'm giving the explanation.
No, it's because it's Eid. It's a holiday.
Mm.
Families get together, so you get to see people that you haven't seen in a long, long time. So you try to wow them.
True, and there's the other part of like being involved with the whole idea game with all of the kids being.
That's for the kids
growing up, and
that's
for kids.
Like Boots was, were you there when Boots was talking about it? The idea, he's like, as a system, it's flawed. He was like, when you're a kid, you start with your fives, right? You know, you get five riyal in Eid, so you look after every single Eid because that's when you're collecting money, right? And then as you get older, it gets more and more and more. And then when you get to a certain age, you just cut off.
Yeah, you stop. Like
you get nothing.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, it's like one day your stock is rising day two bankruptcy.
You've peaked, basically.
Exactly.
It's not even nothing. It's no, you got to give money now.
Yes.
So we see you're in the negative.
It's the cycle. It's the cycle, guys. You know, you've gotten all of those ideas for all of those years up until you're like,
you should have saved them so you start giving them back.
Exactly.
You should have invested them. Mm. Yeah.
So it's a scam.
I mean, it keeps the celebrations going, doesn't it? It's worth it to see the smiles all around.
Is it though?
Are you buying happiness with idea?
I mean, wasn't your happiness bought with idea once upon a time?
Technically, yes. Yeah,
wasn't that the reason you looked forward to
So money can't buy happiness.
Ideas.
Yeah, but how much are you going to give out then?
We see...
Not enough to make people happy.
Exactly.
We see that.
But every little...
Exactly. That's where the collecting comes in. That's where the collecting comes in. That's where the, you know, strategic maneuvering around the family members.
Oh, no, don't go. Don't go there. Listen.
It doesn't happen.
You can't guilt people.
I mean, they try to hustle me. The kids try to hustle me, so...
That's what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. And they do it quite well.
Yes, again, you're the giver now.
Mm.
So give.
Give, yes, give out freely and with love.
I give nothing.
How is your aid? How is...
Vibes, energy, no circuit. Amazing, alhamdulillah.
Vibes, energy, amazing.
Exactly, that's
okay.
It.
The yoga and the sat. Exactly. Vibes.
Okay. Me and the dogs.
Okay.
We just yoga together.
Mm.
That's the vibe.
Sounds...
Anyway, so...
Even the dogs wear leggings.
So basically, everyone is lazy right now listening to this because everyone's getting back to work.
Mm-hmm.
So we wish you all a great week of reconnecting back to work.
Amen.
So whatever we said, bad Eid, that means it's a week bad Eid week.
Yes.
So like, you know, expect nothing this week.
This is us again recalibrating ourselves back to regular life.
Amen.
Amen. All right.
It's difficult.
Thank you for being here. Difficult. We appreciate you. It seems like the guys have nothing to talk about today. And I guess we'll be out of here then.
Yes, we'll be. Thank you for joining
what
us.
What do you have to talk
for
about?
For like 6 minute episode. I want to talk about how if you are a Saudi or you're from the Gulf,
mm-hmm.
you were never born local. You were always born international. Ask me, what do I mean?
What?
Go on. Yes,
what do you mean?
Thank you, Terry. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you. Welcome.
Jump on the bus.
I was having a conversation with a friend of mine. I was like, most of the problem with a lot of people in a lot of countries is that they're born in that country and they live in that country and they stay in that country, right?
Mm.
They don't think of traveling as something, you know, that brings any value or whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're us, if you're in this region, like you were always international, you were never just local. Even True. As a child, the news that you are fed as a child that you hear from the outside is what it's local and international.
Mm-hmm.
So True. Being born in this region, you always paid attention to your local affairs and also your international affairs.
True.
You've never had to just say, you know what, I'm just going to think about myself and think about my place and my home and not look outside.
Well, we've had the opportunity, and first of all, growing up in this region, a lot of us is privileged enough to have had the opportunity to travel, you know, for leisure and travel wildly around the world, right? And that
not a lot, but yeah,
a good percentage, I would say, you know, and not necessarily, you know, far away places, even, you know, going to Egypt, going to Lebanon, going to
the Gulf countries.
Going to the Gulf countries, exactly. Like you True. Get to, you know, experience all of the different people that live in these countries, you know, when you go out and you visit them. So, and plus being in a very strategic part of the world that's also geopolitically relevant, I feel is important for you to know what's actually going on.
I would credit it more to that rather than traveling.
No, because a lot of people don't really keep up with the news, but they do have that cultural awareness by exactly. being internationally exposed, right?
And by being in a position where your surrounding areas, you have a common, let's say, angle with each and every surrounding country
exactly.
that you have.
Which is language, which is religion, which is culture.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
That was even before us becoming a country.
True.
That was always the behavior of this region.
Mm-hmm.
This region always paid attention to what's around it because there were so many things always happening around you. So even from back in the day, you were always told to listen to what's happening here and pay attention to what's happening outside because it does have an effect on you.
Mm. Of course, you got Hajj, you got trade, it's happening all around you.
You had people all the different empires that grew in the region and competed over the same areas. We're talking about Mandagat, Syria, Sham, Lebanon. This is where civilization started, right? like all the ancient millennia that went down and the exposure to all these different cultures has seeped into us, I feel. Like we, you know, as much as we are very much proud of our own culture and, you know, we are, you know, we see the richness in it as much as we do see the importance of, you know, being connected to everybody else around us.
Also, having a culture in a region that's a melting pot of so many other cultures, mm-hmm. and actually having and keeping the identity, that's commendable, bro. I mean, very hard to do.
That goes to show you just how strong and how deep the roots of that culture is in us. Like there's a lot of, you know, traits and features as Arabs, as Muslims, as Saudis as well. That's any, it, you can't outroot it from us. It's part of who we are. It's part of our identity.
I don't know why you answer me like a CNN, like waiting for another question.
No, it's not about that.
He answers like I'm supposed to ask him something else.
No, it's not about that. I know. I feel like it's, yeah, when you look at our culture, there's a continuation that went on for more than 1,000 years. And that's, I think, part of why we are able to hold on to our identity so strongly.
Yeah, but also at the same time, where we are compared to other Khaliji countries, we also have our own identity. It's comparable to them in so many ways, but you can tell that, like we can tell that they're different than us, right? And it's still, that did not even melt into the place that you live in, and it, likewise for them.
And, but you do have those.
Even though we all marry from each other, we all travel to each other's countries, we have relatives, like all of that. We do businesses.
Well, I feel like you still do have those broader cultural, you know, umbrellas that do combine us. Yes, you do have your, you know, idiosyncrasies in different places. You do have your cultural, you know, differences. But at the same time, there is that bigger umbrella that, you know, combines all of us, you know. It starts with though. And we all wear this because it's, we're all living under the same conditions, right? We all see the benefit of doing this. It goes with shmar, you know, even the way we talk. All of those, you know, they seep into each other.
You're making more of a regional comparison. He's making more of a, you're comparing us to the States, for example.
Yeah. Not really. Like,
when you're talking about a continuation of a culture, mm-hmm. that was more of an abrupt change that happened there that really highlights the difference between the continuation of culture that we have versus the crash course of melding cultures that happened
in the States. Yeah. I mean, the States was always different in that sense of being open to that melting of cultures, right? Welcoming it even and letting it form basically the country as a group.
I'm talking before depending, that, it wasn't welcoming.
Depending which state you live in. In some states, you never hear a name of any other country in the world because it doesn't matter to you.
But you do hear, for example, Spanish in a lot of different states now, right? There is a demographic shift in terms of, hey, it's not just an English-speaking country. There's a lot of places in the States where, you know...
And there's a lot of places in the state that do not know Spain exists. They think everything is Mexico.
True.
That's what I'm saying, Spanish, you know, not even Spain. The States is different, I think, and unique. It's just, in terms of being such a big country, there's so much going on there that, you know, it's too much to keep track of, much less keep track of the rest of the world, you know? Yeah, in terms of their regional proximity as well.
Because the States, like...
They got Canada up top and Mexico at the bottom. That's it.
No, yeah. You're not even supposed to care about any of those. Like I grew up there as a kid, right? And as a kid, when you're there, living there every single day, the thing that they keep making you pay attention to is local. So you have your local news. You have everything that's happening in your county and then your city. Like all of those, it's all very small, very local. They don't give you the time to care and think about what's happening in the world.
Zoomed in.
Exactly. And the only thing that they want you to hear about the world and care is if we say, this is our enemy, get in line. That's it. Like, no, this is not our friend. Like, they don't give a shit about that. They just want you to hear a name of a country when there's something is wrong so you can just say, oh, I know this country because this country did something wrong to America. This is how you're basically raised.
That's the media machine, basically. That's ingrained there.
But again, it depends on different states. If you grew up in New York, New York has so many cultures in it and so many people from all over the world that you'll start to understand, oh yeah, this person is from this country, this guy is this guy is that. Like you have an idea of these countries and the people and those cultures because you're exposed to them. But most of America is not exposed to all of that.
So you'd say New York is you have some of the big cities.
Some of the hubs, yes. Some of the hubs. Most other states, like, they have no fucking time to hear about another country and give a shit about it. No, they care about what's their party doing. Are they electing the president that they want? Are they getting the things out of their party that they think they deserve in terms of tax cuts or whatever it is? So everyone's looking at their own livelihood. They don't give two shits about what's happening.
I mean, in the world. If you look at some of the states, some of the states are big enough to be, countries in their own right. You look at, for example, Texas, you look at California. These are huge places with a lot going on. So I wouldn't say it's understandable, but it kind of is, right? And you are stuck in that bubble for so long that nothing else exists out of it. It's just like, you just reminded me, for example, of people who like ancient Chinese writers, right? Who literally viewed China as the center of the world, and anything or everything happening outside of China is irrelevant because, hey, there's so much going on here. There's so much richness in the culture. There's so much, cultural streams in the different places in China that nothing else really matters. And they exported that to the world, similar to what the States is doing with language, with music, with Buddhism is something that, started in India and then went to China and then expanded from there to the rest of Asia. And now that's the role the States is playing, hence not caring for anything else, right?
Yeah, but it's also, let's not be naive. Like, there's a reason why they don't want you to hear about any other countries. And so you don't know what your country is doing everywhere else in the world. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. Like, right now, what's happening in America, right? You have an election coming up. And because of the election coming up, everyone saw how Biden basically had the Democratic Party for the last 4 years backtracked on everything that they cared for, right? Everything that they bullshit about human rights or whatever. And then you see what's happening in Gaza, and you see all that bullshit talk never getting any action, right? So you have all these young Democrats, young voters are saying, hey, why do you want my vote? I'm not going to vote for you when you're doing 1, 2, 3. That doesn't represent us. Mm. And because you, as the DNC and the Republican Party, all of you, you spent such a long time saying, yo, you don't need to care about what's happening outside, that you don't know how to deal with this. Mm. Someone's telling you to do something that you've already been planning and allowing to happen for so many years, but Americans didn't really care. But now they're caring. And you're like, I don't know. No, we're good. Like, we're concerned. Oh, we're telling them not to do. Oh, we're shocked by.
It's the hypocrisy.
You did absolutely nothing about it. Mm. So everyone now is looking at you saying, hey, no, we want you to do something about it because that represents us. And to the powers at hand, they're like, no, you guys should not give a shit about what's happening abroad because we're taking care of that. What's the term that they always use? American what?
Supremacy?
No.
That's a problem. No. Hegemony.
Would say, what's the name?
Exceptionalism.
Anything that has to do with, they'll call it foreign affairs. Mm. They call it interests.
Mm. America's interests.
America's interests. Mm.
Interests abroad, yeah.
Because that covers a whole lot of things.
Exactly. It can mean so much.
Business. That's basically code word for business.
So you have all of this happening, and then they don't know how to deal with it because it's not something they ever had to deal with it before. But here, you grew up in this whole Middle East having to deal with international and local at the same time, keeping an eye out, seeing what's happening across the globe, and also keeping an eye on what's happening around you.
It is, and it's not something you can separate yourself from. And I think part of it is the culture and the religion, because we do care about each other as, the Arab countries. We do care about each other as the Khaliji countries. And, whatever happens to one will affect the rest of us. So we can't really take ourselves out of the equation. That option does not really exist for us. But at the same time, it does allow us, the strength to build with those around us, right? Because we have that shared culture, because we have the same interest at the end of the day of having stability in the region, having prosperity in the region, having growth in the region, then at least we know that there is always going to be that attempt to come to consensus and unity in that direction.
The question is that I always wonder, why do they not want to allow us to do that?
Because that...
Whatever we say here, it's going to sound like it's kind of crazy to a lot of people, but...
There's a lot of reasons.
What are you talking about?
When you're looking at, the modern Middle East, right? What was the modern Middle East? Modern Middle East started with the end of World War One and the carving up of the remains of the Ottoman Empire, which led to the rise of the modern countries of Iraq, Jordan, you know, Syria, and that's a British tactic that they've used for a long time. You know, divide and conquer. It's as simple as that. You are aware that these people united once controlled the world, and you have been, you know, confronted by their knowledge in science and in economy and culture and in sociology and just building an entire empire that works, that was, you know, multicultural, that was diverse, you know, that was tolerant and that held sway for a very long time. And at this point in time, that's not something you want to see come to life, because that will challenge your own status in the world.
True.
That is not an easy player to play with in terms of world politics and cultural politics. So that, I feel, is a big part of it. And maybe another big part of it is the fact that the region is so diverse, like talking Min al-Maghrib all the way to Al-Imarat, there's so many. Yes, we are united by language. Yes, we are united by religion, but that's at the end of it, but we are also, you know, differentiated by a whole lot of different things, by our environment, by our the intricacies of our languages, you know, the cultural customs of each region.
Economies.
So, the economies as well. So, and each of these places has its own legacy, and most of them have been tainted by a colonial legacy, basically, that kept it from being able to grow and rise on its own. Like Al-Jazair for a long time had to deal with 10-year civil war. Masr for a long time had to deal with, you know, imperialist interest basically fucking it over left and right. So there's a lot of reasons in here, you know, there's a lot of different ingredients in this pot.
Yeah, but you already showed that if you don't want to be somewhere, you just leave. But when it comes to leaving our region, it's somewhat of a,
What do you mean? Like as a, in what sense leave? As a person, yeah, anyway,
as a state.
Mm.
Look, let me explain to you this way. This is how I always explain America to my friends.
Mm.
When I look at America from abroad, I don't see free elections and the freedoms and all this, like, you know, bullshit that they keep spewing.
Mm.
What I see is that there are two brothers, and these brothers own the United States.
Mm.
And every 4 years, they let the people choose between these two brothers to come and rule them.
Mm.
So once Brother Red, and
four years later,
it's Brother Blue.
Mm.
If Brother Red stays for 8 years, you can't stay here anymore. We need to make changes. So they bring Brother Blue.
Mm.
Because when it comes to foreign policy, Red and Blue already agree on everything when it comes to foreign policy.
Because Red and Blue are aware of what the interests.
They're in the same family.
Exactly. Yeah,
you know,
they already decided, you know what, this is where we're moving internationally, and this is what the plan is internationally. But locally, it feels like you're choosing between two different sides. But you're actually choosing from two brothers who already
agreed
and shook their hands on what's the plan for the world.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a very good analogy. And it rings true when you look at the state of the world today. There is a focus on business interests for the states, which means, you know, whenever they see the opportunity to intervene, whether it's, you know, covertly or overtly, they will do that. And we've seen that over the past 50 years. And in this region, we've seen that as well. And it had led to disastrous consequences. Harb al-Iraq, until now, you know, the region is suffering from that. You know, Iraq is still rebuilding from that. So, it exists. It is just there. Yes, that is part of the play.
Because if you were so free, you would have found a third brother or sister by now. Someone who comes in, like, you know what? We don't like these two. We want someone else to come in and really make changes. And if Brother Red and Brother Blue were not in agreement on everything to happen across the globe, we would have seen, as the world, every time there's a change in president, that there's a change in foreign policy. The only time we ever got close to it was Donald Trump.
I mean, and even
because
then,
he wasn't the same brother.
Yeah, exactly. He wasn't in the same club.
Exactly.
Know? Yeah, he didn't get the memo. Basically.
Exactly.
Yeah, these are the things we agreed on. Do you think? See, in that case, do you think there is a possibility for a third brother to come out? I don't think there is.
No, there isn't, because they're already,
the status quo has already been established.
They are living in a monarchy that they don't see. They think it's free elections. they think.
And the problem, and the, I think the sad thing, and it's not the problem, is that like when you look at the States and the way that it is devised at the moment, it is not built for you, common citizen. It's not built for you, average Joe. It's, you are not the person being served. Money is what's being served in the States. You know, the more you donate, the more, the bigger your bank account, the more you can lobby, the more you can get your own way.
And if you
and have, that is the reality.
And you have, if you have two brothers that figured out how to take so much money out of it, you just build yourself a free empire. So why?
A free empire.
Yeah. Why should I let this?
It ain't free, homie. It ain't free.
Oh, no, but I have.
And expensive.
No, it's expensive.
But it's free.
No, it's expensive that I will make someone else pay for, which is the taxpayers.
Mm.
But for us, business will always run. We can't be shut down.
No, you can't. No, you cannot. You operate the world, do you not, basically?
Exactly.
Yeah. So in that case, that leaves us in a position where, hey, do we want to remain in a position where we are dictated to by the whims of the world, or do we want to actually take control of our own destiny? And I think we are very much taking control of our own destiny in that position. Like, you see ourselves and our importance to the region and how the leadership position that we have had for such a long time is something that we wear with pride and with strength. And
yeah, but you still have a threat.
You always had a threat.
Yeah, but yeah. You still have a threat.
You have multiple threats, not just one. Yeah.
Well, multiple threats are created by one threat. And if you remove that threat, then everything is fine. But I'll give you an example. 6 months, the whole world saw Israel for the same way, in the same way that we all see it,
mm-hmm.
right?
That we've always seen it.
Exactly. It's something that we always talked about. And, yo, this is how they behave. This is who they are. And everyone's like, nah, whatever, shut up, bro.
Mm-hmm.
But now for 6 months, the whole world is looking at it every single day. And the superpower that can make all this stop is now stopping because it fits into its foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what this little dickhead does, they're always going to allow it to happen.
Unfortunately.
Yes.
Very much unfortunately.
Yeah, because that's what's because you can't
It serves the interests of empire. At the end of the day, that's what it is. It serves the interests of empire. Having a colonial outpost, you know, in the middle of one of the most sensitive and richest regions in the world is important, you know. That's the stick. That's a problem. That's a stick.
So if you look outside, me and you, I think we had this conversation a long time ago. I think I was talking to Kumbaya Shamsi.
Kumbaya Shamsi.
I think we were talking about weapons of war.
Mm-hmm.
With Kumbaya Shamsi.
With Kumbaya Shamsi.
Yeah. That's very funny that Kumbaya Shamsi has that range.
Yes. And so I was telling you, you were telling me like, yo, what if we didn't have any of this? What if we all took diplomacy or some shit like that? I don't remember our conversation.
Some Kumbaya shit.
Yes, it was some bullshit. And I was with the stance of, yo, no, you need military weapons. You're always going to need military weapons. Because even if you want to be Kumbaya, you need weapons to protect you so you can stay Kumbaya.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It keeps you Kumbaya, basically. The bigger my stick, the more you are, you know, wary of fucking with me. Basically.
Yeah, there's going to be no time in our lifetime that we're going to see military weapons just disappear.
Well, you see, that's what Kumbaya Shamsi hoped for. But unfortunately, Kumbaya Shamsi learned better. You know, he has realized that now sometimes weapons are a tool of peace.
Which is kind of weird.
The contradiction, the paradox.
Yeah, I mean, if Russia didn't have nuclear weapons, Russia wouldn't exist right now.
And not just that, like, yes, the Cold War existed. You know, yes, there was a lot of conflict in a lot of places around the world that flared up. Afghanistan, Angola, Cuba, Masr. You know, but at the same time, the fact that they both had nuclear weapons is what kept them from starting World War III.
Yes.
You know, mutually assured destruction. Mad. Look it up. Just finished reading a nuclear policy book, so I'm up to date on that. But, and that's the same problem we have today, right? Like, you are not going to be able to extract, you know, this colonial outpost, or at least change it, because they have that same stick, whether they admit it or not.
Look, right now, what are we watching is happening in the world right now? We're watching Iran saying, rawr. That's what it's saying. It's saying, oh, Israel, you hit us. You hit our embassy in Syria, so we will, rawr, attack. And everyone was like, oh, finally Iran is entering the scene or whatever.
Finally, Allah yastir, astaghfirullah al-azim. Okay.
I'm looking at it and I'm like, okay. Like, we know, anyone with common fucking sense knows there's no way in hell is Iran going to war with Saudi right now. There's no way.
It
doesn't have the air power. It doesn't, even if it's going to move its troops on the ground, they're going to be bombed in the middle of Iraq before they even make it to Lebanon, Syria.
And keeping in mind, this is the same Israel that's been bombing and killing, you know.
Bombing, by the way.
Yes. Okay. You know, Iranians for a long time without Iran doing anything about it.
Yes.
You
know? So now, how are they going to retaliate? Are they going to shoot them down with 100 missiles? Like, what are you going to do? Like, this region is already, like, cut up into pieces because of you. And now, because of the both of you, actually, okay? Both of you are the main reason for the, I don't know how long, that we've had bullshit in our region.
The disharmony. Let's call it the disharmony that's happening in our region.
And you're watching the superpower saying, you know what?
Well, this plays into their interests, Ibadul. See, keep them. Basically, that is unfortunately the play for, you know, if you don't want order, then create chaos. You know, if you don't want people to build, then allow destruction to thrive. You allowed it. You are allowing it. You are giving it cover on a day. You are still sending weapons. You are still sending money, you know, and you still have consensus across the political spectrum where everybody's saying, hey, yes, this will continue to serve our military industrial complex interest. That's not going to change. Where else are we going to test our new weapons?
Exactly.
Where else are we going to? And unfortunately, it's just, and when you look at where we are today in terms of the history of Al-Arab, like, we have gone through a lot to get to this point. There has been multiple wars. There has been multiple, like, nations jumping in and sending troops and trying to resolve this issue. But, you know, we've come to realize at some point that, hey, let's try something else. And it seems, unfortunately, that something else that we're trying is not even working. Like, even that, that path of peace that we have been promoting for such a long time, you know? That's what happens when you deal with warmongers, Ibadul.
Well, that's the thing. You get the U.S. out of both pictures and both wars end.
You see, and that's the thing. When you look at, even when you look at Iran, like, what is one of the founding principles of the Islamic Republic? Fuck the U.S., right? And why fuck the U.S.? Because they've had to deal with their own 100-year bullshit policy of...
Yeah, but let's be honest.
Imperial
Iran
intervention.
And the U.S. are in the same bed. They've been in the same bed. They gave Iraq straight to Iran, bro. They've been in the same bed. Just the U.S. How are we going to sign a nuclear peace deal with Iran if you're such bad enemies? And if you hate the U.S. so much, why would you trust them all of a sudden?
So
let's not play the game of like, yo, Iran is by itself. No, bro. Iran, when it bombed Begik, right? And Houthis were saying, oh, we did it. We all know that Houthis is not capable of doing it. But the U.S. saw Iran do it.
Did nothing.
They did absolutely nothing. They've been in fucking bed. It's just the U.S. is deciding, when do I want this 10-year war with Iran so I can make more money off of military? It just hasn't decided yet because it was always thinking about, China. And then Russia became annoying as hell again. So that disturbs them. And now since you're becoming annoying and I want to go after that guy, I got to deal with you. But I'm saving you for later on so I can save up some money. Like, I think we said it like during it, I was talking to you. I was like, there's a difference between political science and political engineering. This is political engineering.
Say that again.
Political engineering.
Okay.
Like this, Ukraine has been in play for a long, long time. They didn't just wake up and sat on it for like 2 months in advance. No, it has always been in play. Iran, everything it's been doing has always been in play. Everything this is financial, political engineering and financial engineering at its fucking best. And you're watching something, then you're like, why isn't the world reacting? No, because there's a plan for all of this to happen.
No, but so even when you say that, why isn't the world reacting, who are you expecting? Who are you expecting to do what exactly?
I'm expecting all the countries that give a shit about human rights to actually show that they give a shit about human rights rather than saying, oh, we don't like that.
They don't.
Well, that's the thing. They don't.
That's political rhetoric, you know?
And if that's the case, then everyone should be allowed to do whatever is best for them.
There's multiple things I just want to respond to here. It's first, as you just reminded me of an image of like a cat playing with a mouse, basically. And that's basically what you're describing. You're describing, we need an enemy. We need a politically convenient enemy. We need somebody we can really point at and say, look at how different they are and look at how bad they are. But at the same time, we need to keep or ensure that the flames are always alight, basically. And that's basically what allows us to keep the weapons contracts going on and what allows us to keep, you know, the rest of our, you know, corporate juice moving. But at the same time, you don't want to take it out. No, you don't want to take it out of...
It's just for no, the phrase.
No, you don't want to take it. That's what it is. Slush funds, my guy. No. Slush funds. No. Like, you don't want to take it out because if you do that, then that leaves you with no one else basically to play with. Like, who else are you going to play with? North Korea?
That whole sentence is wild, by the way.
Right? Like, I'm just looking at it from that way. And it's a weird angle to look at because it justifies empire. It justifies you to have all of those military bases abroad. It justifies you having all these advanced weapons because, hey, they hate us for who we are, Turks.
Because you have a plan. And since you have a plan, you're going to keep pushing that plan forward.
Well, where is that plan going, though, right? Because you are already...
engineering.
And I'm sad, that's what I'm saying. Like, you are already looking at the world pulling away. The world has been pulling away for the past 20, 30 years.
Allah yastar.
Like in terms of, you know, the hegemony of the U.S. over the rest of the world. Like at this point in time, you do not have that consensus. You know, Russia is still Russia-ing, China is still China-ing, you know, and we are realizing that we need to build our own power base as well, rather than rely on an external backer with a very fickle, you know, brother system in place.
So I think we said this a couple of years ago on the podcast. Damn, when I say a couple of years ago, it's been a while.
The old.
We talked about the death of globalization.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've been watching it for the last 3 years that globalization is not really happening. The globe is separating. Well, everyone is going to look more internal than international. I care about mine.
Well, what's the definition of globalization? Just to recap it real quick. It's bringing global into local, was it something like that, basically?
Exactly, yes. To feel like a country, like, you know how every city feels like every other city in the world?
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what it is. I'll say it. It's capitalism.
It's capitalism. Now I understand what you are saying. Okay. Yes. It's the reason why, you know, literally all the cities look the same. That's a really good fucking way of putting it. It's why you go to Starbucks everywhere in the world and if you're comfortable, you know, because you want to feel at home.
Because you know what's happening.
Like, honestly, for me, at least living here, living in Saudi, I feel like it is a golden time for us to really celebrate our own identity and our own culture. And I very much look forward to seeing it continue and thrive, right? And at the same time, Yani, I don't know about the rest of the world, but I do feel like we are kind of getting over that cultural divide of the US being, you know, our beacon for everything. You know, it's no longer the beacon for a lot of people around the world.
Oh, it was never the beacon. It was just the marketing was so good.
Hey, but
and people believed it.
Exactly.
While,
yes. People believed it. People swallowed it.
Yeah, and you're conscious. You're conscious about it. Like, yo, they're the beacon. But in reality, like when you really just open your eyes, you'd be like, okay.
No, when you look at it, when you actually like look at the moves and you look at the consequences and you look at how they are living in their own country, like,
yeah, how every single president, no matter how much some people love them, has so much blood on their hands. It's crazy.
See, and there's an interesting thing that I read a couple of days ago. Somebody posted something that was talking about, like, and at the end of the day, like, the US and Europe, they come from a Christian mind, and that Christian mind once upon a time had a very important part to play in terms of the missionary work that they had in their own, you know, core beliefs as, hey, we are right and everybody else is wrong, and we need to go teach them how wrong they are and how right we are.
Talking about the Gothic era.
You know, no, and I'm talking about the whole, you know, how the US became the US, how, you know, they sent missionaries all across the world, you know, and that same spirit is reanimated today in terms of the rhetoric of, hey, liberal values, hey, human rights. It's not enough for us.
It's the same playbook.
Yeah, it's not enough for us to do it for our own self. No, we have to teach you how wrong you are and how right we are. And I think the world is not buying that message anymore. That's where I think we are.
And like, that's, I told you, the separation.
The globalization, the death of globalization.
That's it. It's done. We no longer look at you as anything, not even in terms of entertainment, not anything.
Well, they still are, but you know, we are also aware of the importance of building our own, you know, initiatives, building our own communities, building our own voice.
No, see, what they did was like Netflix and all these other streaming platforms are all just tools to the US, right? And they spent a lot, even messaging. Mm. They spent a long, long time trying to shove so many things down our throats that none of us asked for. Mm. And they thought by forcefully putting that image out there that you're forced to change your mind and people will rally with what we believe in. They didn't give a shit about other people's beliefs, religions, or anything. Mm. They just went for what they thought, yo, this is how we move. Okay. If you don't move like this, you're our enemy.
You're wrong.
Yes. Exactly. And then they saw the whole world just say, nah, son. Mm. And well, so they're losing their value in that. Now you can't, anytime there's a new show out, whatever it is, what does everybody say? Okay. Like, oh, what are they trying to sell me here? Any more LGBTQ, any more trans? What are you trying to give me here?
What is the agenda that you're trying
to push? Exactly, because in every single show that you had, you always had an agenda. But now everybody is exposed to that agenda. And they're like, yo, what don't really fuck with y'all like that?
Bro, for me, the funniest is the entire category of movies of, hey, we went to war and we killed your people, but we feel really bad.
Yes.
You know, the fact that there's literally an entire subgenre of, I'm sorry, you know,
with a hint of a love story.
I'm sorry. I killed your family. Is just, you know, yeah, obscene. Obscene is the word, honestly.
Speaking of obscene,
I'm sorry for how I feel, not for how you feel.
I mean,
it's the internal struggle that I had to face by killing your family.
Yes, exactly.
I didn't want to do it,
but they made me.
I didn't want to do it.
I wanted to go to college.
You had the choice. Mm. I had to make a choice. Yes.
They trained.
I'm not telling you. I'm telling myself.
Exactly.
This is part of my emotional.
This is black comedy at its pure, ladies and gentlemen. Like, we are laughing at the worst thing that you.
I'm going. You know. Don't worry, man. I'm going to be living in pain for what I did to you.
Yeah.
That I think was justified.
Mm.
But I will live through it.
That was, you know, just reckless.
Pray for me. Pray for me. All right? You know, that I get through the thing that I caused you.
Yeah. Keep in mind, I will go back to my country that will not give a shit about me.
Exactly.
You know, and will not treat me and will kick me out of medical insurance because...
But I will think about you.
Yeah, exactly. Because capitalism.
Because I'm thinking about what I did to you and how that affected me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very true.
Womp, womp.
Womp, womp.
Well, speaking of hell, bro. Sadness and dark, and let's keep this train rolling.
Yeah, I was just about to say that was a cheery road that we just went down on.
Dig deeper.
Yeah.
J. Cole's apology. J. Cole apologized.
He apologized?
J. Cole. Turks, you haven't been following this.
I have no idea.
Can we give him a recap?
Better be quick.
Well, everyone who's been listening, Michigan, he's been on the podcast with us every single
episode. And I haven't
we
talked been listening about over here. Okay. While I'm on the
a
podcast.
A few months ago.
No, we're not doing this. Okay. We're not doing this.
No, not the whole thing.
We're not doing this. So didn't J. Cole just release a reply diss track to Kendrick?
With a mixtape.
And we're not asking Turks. Mm. We're just saying.
We're saying, yes.
Okay, so that's what happened, right?
So he released 7-Minute Drill.
Which we thought was very mid.
Which we also talked about, yeah.
And which we thought it was like, hey, he's talking to him like a friend.
And he's not really taking shots, you know.
Yes, it felt like he was talking to him as a friend.
Mm.
And then two, three days later, there was the Dreamville Fest, where he does in his hometown.
Okay, which is his own concert, basically.
And J. Cole gets on stage, and he apologizes for releasing that track.
Very out loud.
He says, it did not sit well in my soul.
Bismillah alayh.
I think we talked about it on the podcast. Like, he didn't really, like, whatever he said, you know.
He didn't have his heart in it.
No, he didn't believe it either.
Yeah, he didn't.
Like, when he was talking about his catalog, come on, like, bro.
Like, your first shirt was classic. You know, your second was, what was it? Your second was Tragic. Yeah. And the third one was.
No, your second was something bad, but they gassed it.
They gassed it, okay. And the third one was your prime. So you're basically saying two of my three albums were pretty good, but you just didn't like the second one. Right? This is how you're dissing me.
Wow.
He didn't really put his weight
in. He kind of said, you only have damn.
First one was classic. No. But third one was your prime.
Oh, it's not he get both of them. Yes, you're right.
Exactly. So it wasn't even really putting in.
That's not a diss.
And then he gets on stage and he says,
I apologize.
It didn't, like, this is not something that I felt pressured. You know, like everybody was waiting for me to respond.
Everybody was on my phone.
You know, people
said, let's go to war.
What are you going to say? And I put it out there and then I went to sleep and I couldn't go to sleep. Right. I just like, shoof, there's two ways of looking at this, right? As a rapper, you just like shot yourself in the foot. You know, you just did the worst thing that you can do whilst in a rap battle. Right?
Whilst
okay. In a rap battle. Like, no.
No, we're sticking with whilst.
Whilst, okay. As a person,
so he,
you know.
He ended his diss with, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't mean it.
As,
and yeah. I'm sorry.
And no. And he actually said, like, during the concert, he's like, yo, I'm going to pull it off the streaming services, which he hasn't yet. But he said it, like, I'm this is how much I don't want.
Sounds like marketing, but okay.
Okay. Also could be a very good way of looking at it. But the second one, as a person, like, this kind of sits with J. Cole's persona, right? The personality that he's been showcasing, the person that he's been becoming over the past couple of years.
Good. I'm glad that we got here.
No, but...
Because that's where the conversation is.
Yeah.
Because if you're a J. Cole fan, you know that he was about positivity for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Right? He's like a college counselor.
Like, yes. He's like, yeah, the conscious rapper.
Right?
You know, yeah. Conscious rapper.
Not a conscious rapper. He was like...
The cool college
love yourself,
counselor.
Bro.
Exactly. You know, support your city. Support your people. You know, be friends.
Mm. Talk about mental health.
Don't fall in love with false prophets.
Mm. Don't follow the money, you know.
You know, that's what he was always preaching.
Mm.
But the last couple of years,
exactly,
he came out and started like killing tracks.
Going hard.
Every feature, he was amazing on it. True. Everything he released, it had fucking fire in it. So like, you knew that, you know, he had that hunger in him. He's come back, he's like, yo, I'm gonna take on everybody. So you're like, yo, the J. Cole that we thought was gonna come finally started coming out.
Finally.
Yes. And yes. Like the J. Cole that we all saw from his first album that what he could be.
The potential.
Exactly. We saw all of that. Like, yo, this guy is on fire right now. He's untouchable.
Mr. Dreads. Yes.
Okay. And then this happens where you got called out and then you went on the attack and the attack was very weak. And then you just sit with yourself. So,
first of all, did you really get called out though? Like, that's the thing. Like, and a part of me says you kind of started this, J. Cole. Like, you started this, Jermaine.
He did.
You know, you're the one that came up with the line, the big three. That was the line that got responded
to. No. He didn't come up with it. That was the thing.
This is
what the people branded, and he said it out loud.
Exactly. You said it out loud. You brought it into the conversation.
Yes.
You know, and then Kendrick came out and he crapped, you know, on everybody else. And, you know, and you took it personal. You didn't have to respond. I think a part of me says he didn't have to respond, you know. And by responding in such a weak way and taking it back, you hurt your credibility
and
as a rapper
and as
in
you
the
said
community.
A few minutes ago, he got peer pressured into releasing something and doing something that he never thought he was actually going
to
do.
So he admitted to his mistake.
Yeah, he admitted to his mistake.
He did.
But now... With him doing that, there's two camps. The people who really love hip-hop and the people who really love J. Cole. As a rap hip-hop fan, you know that this was a huge mistake for you to come and apologize during a fight.
Mm-hmm.
There's no peace during war.
True.
You go at each other.
You're in it.
You let everybody decide who they think is one or two or three. And then you ride whatever wave you're given, or you keep fighting it to be number one.
Mm-hmm.
But what you did was like, yo, keep me out of this conversation. You apologizing for that is you saying, you know what? I don't want this fight, which automatically removes you from the big three.
It automatically damages, I think, your status and credibility that you've been building for the past couple of years. Because you've been coming hungry and you've been making the statement that I'm the best, that I'm the greatest, that I'm the GOAT at the moment, right?
And when it came time to deliver,
you
choked.
You didn't just choke, my guy. I wish you choked. If you choked, it would have been better, right? If you didn't say anything.
He choked.
You know, you
is he trying you to took pivot back. By being the better person or the bigger person?
He's trying to focus on his mental health, you know? And he's
Which
trying...
Which sounds like trying to be the... oh, no, my new move is... I'm a bigger person than this.
No, I think it's a personality thing because it's not.
I think it's a personality.
It is a personality thing.
Thing
you know,
I'm because, asking. I'm not. No, because, I'm not aware I think, of whatever is happening.
I think the last 5 years, the reason we saw him being so competitive is because he looked at it, yo, I'm competitive in having the best verse. I'm competitive in having the best music. That was what he saw as competition in hip hop. Mm. He never saw it as beef. Mm. He saw it as, you know, the work of art that I'm going to create is going to tell you that I'm so amazing. I don't have to go and attack someone. And then when he was put in a position that he has to attack someone, which he shouldn't have.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't feel like he had to, right? You know?
Again.
Yeah, it's the peer pressure, yes.
Exactly. Whatever happened, happened, right? And then when he found himself in this position that he had to do this and he did it, he was like, it's not me. It's not who I am as a person. This is not how I move. Why should I feed into what people want? I want to be myself, the person that I always preached who I was. So he decided, you know what? I'm going to take it back, be the bigger man. I want to stay true to myself. I want to sleep comfortably. I want my conscience to be free. So I'm going to apologize and say, yo, I don't want to be part of this beef bullshit. I want it to all just be about music and bow out this beef. But you can't have everything that you want on your own terms because you're a nice guy. You put yourself in a position. And when competition started happening, you were like, I'm not here to compete in that way. Mm. I want to compete in this other way.
But isn't he kind of denying like a big part of, you know, rap culture by doing that?
Yeah.
Like you are like this, you know, beef happens in rap, you know, and it doesn't always turn violent. It often doesn't, but you know, sometimes it does. And there's different reasons for that. Let's not get into there. But at the same time, this wasn't that. This wasn't about violence. This was about status in the game. This was about position in the hierarchy of, you know, people's minds.
And this is why I always look at Kendrick different than J. Cole and Drake. Because J. Cole and Drake did a song together, high-fiving each other like good friends. Mm. Because they're nice guys.
Okay.
Because that's who they are. They're nice guys. They brought up in good families. They're nice people.
We said something else about this. It's not just that there's a white influence there.
Well, that's one thing. But either way, they're nice guys.
Yeah.
Because they're nice guys, they did a track together saying, we're the best. Because they're nice guys.
High five.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then what did the person that grew up loving rap did? He came and took a shit on that party. Mm-hmm. Why? Because that's what you did in rap.
Exactly.
In rap, you didn't see where Betty's were all number one. Mm. No, you went to take a crown.
You claim it.
You can claim all you want. You better snatch it.
Yeah.
And he came and he's like, yo, fuck your party. Let go of each other's hands. Okay? I will go to the room and I'm going to crash this party. And that's what he did. He came in with something that we all relate hip-hop to, which is that I'm number one and I'm going to tell you to your face I'm number one. Mm. And there's a Drake leak that just came out. We all heard.
We just heard.
We don't know if it's official or not yet. It's a leak. And if this is the official leak, giving Kendrick 2 bars, okay, cute. He went at Future. He went at Royce. He went at Kendrick. He went at everybody, right?
So
this is like a group track of him going at everybody. Yeah, Kendrick doesn't give a shit about that. Mm. Everybody else here doesn't matter. If you want Kendrick, you only have to look at Kendrick. Because Kendrick's only looking at you. He doesn't give a shit about everybody else. They don't matter to him. Because he knows he's already a monster. So the monster is coming after you.
Hina, this brings us back to the question that you were talking about a while ago. Since we spoke about this recently, you mentioned that you didn't think Drake would respond because... hey, he's part of the machine. He's part of the media machine. The business won't let him respond.
And like what we said, we don't know if this is true or not. Mm.
But we have heard from, you know, a lot of people who in the game that talking about, you know,
that both, there's a track.
Both camps are preparing tracks and both camps are preparing to respond to each other.
And if the machine is going to allow Drake to come back, let's see how long that happens. Because Kendrick doesn't need limits. He doesn't need to be told, yo, this is where you need to stop. It's Kendrick. And this is hip-hop. You know what time it is.
And not just that. Kendrick is someone who grew up in a rough neighborhood. He did not have an easy childhood. He has that, I think, fight in him.
Exactly.
You know, that fight that you didn't
Never
have.
Never mind his childhood. That just him having that dog in him.
Exactly.
That's the scary part. And this is why, okay, Drake is put in a position that he has to respond. Drake, I didn't think he should respond.
You didn't think he should?
I don't think he would respond.
Yeah, that's different.
Okay.
But he should.
When someone gives you a whole verse.
Yeah. When someone's calling out okay. my album name.
A guy who's like really attacking you.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's going to happen.
And it's been something that's been happening for a while.
And look, here's the thing. Even if Kendrick wins this, this is not going to remove Drake from being in the top spot.
I mean, he will have the number ones. He will have the album sales.
He's
will
more international
have
than anybody else. You're not going to remove
streams.
Him. Yeah, the era of killing a rapper does not exist anymore. It just doesn't exist anymore. But it will show that in your history that you took two L's.
And Pusha
and Kendrick. That's what he's going to show. He's going to be a chink in his armor. That's all it's going to be. But people are still going to listen to Drake. People are still going to enjoy Drake's music. He makes the best music that everyone can around the globe can digest. I mean, so I think he's always going to be Drake. I don't think he's going to change anything in it.
Like, do you think, is it going to change anything for J. Cole, for example? Like him apologizing?
Yeah, J. Cole. J. Cole needs to disappear for a minute.
No,
by the way, his last album, was it supposed to be called?
The Fall Off.
Yeah, I think we're already there.
Shoof, if he drops a classic with that, honestly.
There's nothing that's going to, like I just said, if you look at Drake's history, you're going to say he has two L's.
Mm.
We don't know how this is going to happen right now with Kendrick, but let's say he doesn't respond to Kendrick.
Mm.
We're going to say he has two L's, but that's Drake. And J. Cole is going to have an asterisk.
Bowed out.
Yes.
Basically.
To Drake, it's much better for me to ignore it than to address it. And y'all can decide how you feel about that. But to Cole, I respond and apologize and pull myself out. That whole thing together is what the fuck are you doing?
See, that's the thing. Here, there's the rap fans that are going to say that exactly what the fuck are you doing. And then there's rap fans or the J. Cole fans that are going to say, hey, you know what? I respect what you did. That's a big boy move, you know? It is a big boy move for him, obviously. But the rap purists.
Your fan base is going to accept it.
Yeah.
The casual listener is not going to accept it.
I think the rap purists are not going to accept it. The casual listener might not care enough, you know? To actually accept it or not accept it.
Like, thank you for including me as Exhibit A.
I'm calling you a casual listener. Yeah.
Even the casual listener knows that J. Cole apologized.
He didn't until just told him.
Well, now you told me, so now I know.
Yeah. How do you feel about that, Turks?
Nothing.
Okay.
Like, okay, طيب. So.
No, it's just so part cool. of.
Kendrick's still best. Okay, طيب, done.
Again, it's just the fun part, at least for rap fans, is the competition element, you know?
Yeah, I know.
You have been wanting to see this matchup for such a long time, you know?
But I stopped listening to J. Cole for a while. I still listen to Kendrick.
Mm.
But I don't know. There is no competition to me, you know?
It's all about Kendrick.
But nobody, yeah.
I just want good music.
I mean, we're getting that. We're getting
that's
that.
That's all I want. Yeah, I just want good music.
No, without apologies.
Apparently. Without apologies.
Yeah.
No, just give me good music.
Every era had its defining rap beefs, right? Tupac and Biggie, Nas and Jay-Z.
50 Cent and everybody.
You know, 50 Cent and exactly everybody. So, and this era hasn't really had one. Like, the closest we got was Drake and Pusha.
We're beyond that. We're in a world of positivity. We don't have beef. We have tofu. We don't fight each other anymore. We understand each other's struggles.
You sound
we understand each other's traumas. Rappers go to therapy now.
Well, that's kind of the
route. We've grown up.
That's the route.
As an international society.
The streets didn't grow up. The streets are still the streets. So the streets get your grown ass up the fuck out the way and let the streets come take over.
And how does that make you feel?
No, but that's the thing. Rap will always have that connection to the streets.
Exactly.
You know, it will. That is where it was.
Unless you want to separate and say, "Oh, this is mainstream rap now. It doesn't exist. That matter dakhal for what's happening in real rap."
Rock and roll has always had the association with chaos. Until look at it now.
It sucks.
Rock and roll there's sucks amazing now. Indie.
I'm sorry, bro. Rock and roll does not even exist in any way, shape, or form.
In
now.
Your realm,
bro, the closest rock and roll. I don't even know what good band. The only good band I
found. Alabama Shakes are good.
Fucking.
The Black Keys are amazing.
What's their name? Khruangbin. Khruangbin is the only good band out there. It's like
is that a fruit? It's like a German fruit?
It's like a bunch of people with wigs. They're fucking amazing. You know them.
That sounds like hair metal, but okay.
Yeah, no, no, they're really smooth and funky. Zibda, going back to this, I don't think you will be able to take that.
Well, you're not going to take the violence out of I think J.
Cole,
hip-hop?
I think you...
I think J. Cole already did.
I think J. Cole...
I think Drake definitely did.
No, Drake never did.
But Drake was never really violent.
Drake was always spicy.
Yeah.
What?
Drake was always spicy.
I know when the hell I'm playing.
It's spicy.
Crunchy.
Again, you're talking about like the hits. No, we're talking about the discography. We're talking about all the other tracks he has on his album.
Play. I don't know enough Drake songs.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of Drake songs around there. But again, we look at it in terms of music or you look at it in terms of rap. You know, you will sell as many records as you want and you can be a pop artist. But when it comes to the rap heads, the purists, they will always look at the bars and they will always look at how you will respond to a challenge like that. You need to come back. You will come. And he's apparently coming back. Otherwise, you just take the L and keep moving. It's not going to hurt you. You're still going to sell. Mm. But you will have that on your ego.
You can't join... Excuse me. If I say I want to join this thing that is art and create my own art within this art. If you're not devoted to it, then it's not for you.
He's devoted to the art, not to the aspects that are associated
and
art.
Everything that is happening right now is part of the art. It's always been part of the art. That's why we say, oh, but when that
beef
happened,
is part of the art.
Exactly.
Yeah, true.
So it was always, these are the moments where you really show who you are. And all you had to do if you wanted to reply, you should have just given us your best at what you do. You already had a good EP. Like J. Cole didn't need to do the diss track in that way. If you're going to do it the same way you do everything else, or else just let go. But you decided, you know what? Yes, I agree that this is part of the art, but you didn't come in with your heart.
We talked about how Aslan, the diss track, didn't even sound as good as the rest of the EP. Like the rest of the EP sounded pretty clean, pretty good. This one just sounded rushed. It didn't sound as cohesive.
Didn't even sound rushed. Like from the beginning, right? Like, again, let's keep in mind, Metro Boomin did an amazing job on that track. Mm. That track is hard. Mm. So every time Like That hits, it hits. But this is from the second it started. You're laying back. Mm. You're taking it easy.
That's what I'm saying. It just sounded, it rushed. It didn't sound like something that had a lot of energy put into it. You know?
Oh, exactly. See, it didn't sound rushed. It sounded like it had no energy.
Yeah.
It's like you were just doing it because I have to do it, not because I want to show you why.
What would have happened if he had dropped the same mixtape without that track? Like, how would have...
That's the reason why he had to drop.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Everybody's waiting on a reply.
How would have the rap world responded to that? They would have clowned him, right?
Yeah, but again...
They would literally would have said, hey, like, this guy just took shots at you.
But if you never want to do it, why do it now?
Well, it's what you said. He wanted to do it in that way of,
But you didn't want to do it at the end.
The technical element and you know.
Like, you did it. If it sucked, khalas, just leave it. Mm. You don't have to come back and apologize.
It's just felt cute, might delete later.
Yeah. Which sounds, by the way, like such a Drake, album name, honestly. It's not even J. Cole. I should have, honestly,
it's disappointing.
It is disappointing.
It's disappointing.
But I'm proud of him at the same time. I'm proud of you, Jermaine. You're not proud of Jermaine.
I am not proud of him.
He is prioritizing his mental health, homie.
But you know who he is? He's that guy that's like online saying, yo, I'll beat your ass if you pull up. And then you pull up, he's like, listen, man, look, I want to apologize. Bro, I was just
venting.
To kick your ass.
No.
I'm sorry.
I was going through some things. I was just venting. I needed to feel like I could kick somebody's ass. I don't,
you mean tell me someone should hug me?
What did he say? He said, I'll put my chin out. If you want to give me one back. Like, that's how, inspired.
Yeah, because you replied. So you can expect something to come back.
Yeah.
So you say, I'm going to put my shin out. Like, yo, you take a shot. No. I'm going to take a shot either way. And your shot sucked.
Yeah.
See, this is why it looks so stupid in so many ways.
You know what? It makes it even better if Kendrick doesn't even reply to him.
I was just about to say.
I don't think Kendrick's going to reply to him.
Honestly, it makes it so much better. And you're like, I'm just going to ignore this guy.
Because I think I read it to you before. There was a line in one of Kendrick's old tracks. I think it was The Hard Part 4. Let me see if I got it. I got it somewhere around here. T- tiptoeing around my name, you're lame. And when I get at you, homie, don't you tell me you were just playing. This is from the Hard Part 4 in 2017.
Yeah, predictions.
Like the guy said it. Oh, I was just playing, K-Dot. Come on.
Nah, homie. This rap. We don't play in rap. Exactly. You don't play in rap. You're coming at somebody.
You know Kendrick's energy from 10 years ago. Since that verse on Control, Big Sean's track. Since that verse, you know exactly what time it is. He told you. Hip-hop is competition. And you know what time it is. Mm. So you know if he's going to reply to you, he's going to compete. So you should have came in super competitive because you know what he's all about. And that's why we have to wait and see. We have to see what Drake comes up with because I know Kendrick is biting.
Kendrick is just, honestly, he's just waiting to see the response.
Kendrick
honestly.
Is just getting love by sitting back doing nothing now. Mm.
No, I love the position he's in. Like, he is the instigator of this. He yes. threw the cat among the pigeons.
And now the pressure is on you. It's no longer on me.
It's been on you.
I did my part. Now it's on you. Now you're in a position of what are you going to do now, Drake? So that's why it's very interesting. It's a very hard position to be in.
And honestly, like going back to the leak that came out, the Drake leak, the fact that he is responding. So basically, Future and Metro Boomin dropped another album called We Still Don't Like You, which had more people jumping in and apparently taking shots at Drake. And that's what he was responding
allegedly.
To.
Allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. Mm-hmm. And again, keep the focus on Kenny. No, don't lose track. You know, if you do not respond to Kenny, then it's an L.
That's why it's interesting where Drake is at. Drake now is looking at everybody that hates him. Like, yo, why are all these people hating me all of a sudden? Right?
Maybe because you suck.
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But these people hate you. And now you're looking at everybody. You're no longer looking at one person. Mm. You're looking at everyone. And that's what's going to make you lose the battle. You can't take on everyone. What, you're going to give me a whole track of giving everyone a bar of trying to talk shit about them? Okay, cool. And what? And what?
He'll drop an album called Y'all Hurt My Feelings. You know? And it's going to have names, you know, To Curtis.
He's going to sing the whole album.
Yeah, exactly. To Curtis. To Kendrick. Oh, that's going to be fun.
It's not going to be fun.
It's a fun time for rap. Still a fun time for rap.
It's an exciting time.
Yeah.
What's the Kendrick track called?
Like That.
Like That?
Find it on all streaming services. You
know,
it's not been taken off.
Bro, that track has been out for like 3 weeks now.
It's not on Spotify.
It's on everywhere.
Spotify. It's a future track.
It's a future.
It's a
young future. Metro. Search for Young Metro.
Metro Boom?
Yes.
I love how we're educating him about this after we're done with the conversation.
And he's been here for the last 3 episodes while we're talking.
And
about
I didn't care whatsoever.
That's why we love you, Turks. That's why we love you.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We appreciate you. It's getting late right here. We need to go home. I need to go home and get some sleep.
Yes.
I don't care for y'all's existence. Well, we love you, everybody. We wish you all the best. We'll see you soon.
Much love.
Enjoy.
Peace.
Peace.